Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Maddie.
Do you like horror movies?
I sure do.
Well, did you know that most horror movies are inspired by real-life horror?
Really? Like what?
Well, take The Shining, for instance. That's based on Stephen King's real-life addictions, or The Purge, which could be our country any minute now.
Oh, and The Strangers, which is based on a real-life murder. People should be talking about these things.
Hey! Guys.
Oh, hey, Producer Michael.
Michael, hi.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but somebody already is. It's you.
That's right. We are Frygay the 13th, the podcast where we talk about horror in real life and horror in media, all from an LGBTQ perspective.
Because we gay, y'all.
We are proud members of the Legion Podcast Network, and we can be found on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.
And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Come along with us on this crazy journey, and as always,
get slayed.
It's scary time. Lock your doors, check under the bed, and turn on a nightlight because it's time for the scariest stories, history, and conversations ever heard. Every week, an independent creator tells us about the paranormal, ghosts, monsters, hauntings, creepy places, enchanted objects, aliens, and more. Best of all, if you like the creator, you can follow them for more great content, if you dare. Search for Scary Time by Indie Drop-In, wherever you stream podcasts. Welcome to Reverie True Crime. I'm your host, Paige, and today I will be telling you about one of the most mysterious events in United States history. The real story of D.B. Cooper, who is also called Dan Cooper. It's not his real name. Dan Cooper was an alias he used. However, a reporter actually thought they had said D.B. Cooper, which caught on and is used more than Dan Cooper. So with that said, let's get into this story. There's a lot to unpack. There was an airplane heading out from Portland, Oregon to Seattle, Washington on November 24, 1971. It was Thanksgiving Eve. Dan Cooper was said to be an ordinary-looking white male, olive skin, brown eyes, black conventional hair, which was parted on the left side. Probably in his 40s, he was about 170 to 175 pounds and around 6 feet tall. He proceeded to purchase a ticket that cost $20 to get on the Northwest Orient Airlines Flight 305. D.B. Cooper found a seat on the back of the plane, fired up a cigarette, and asked for a bourbon and a soda pop. When the plane was off of the ground, he had a note. He gave this note to one of the flight attendants, 23-year-old Florence Schaffner. The note said, quote, "I have a bomb in my briefcase. I want you to sit next to me," end quote. He opened up his luggage for her to see that inside he had all of these red sticks, wires, as well as a battery. Fake or real, who knows, but that would have scared anyone. Cleverly, he got the flight attendant to give the note back to him. Therefore, it could never be examined by authorities. D.B. Cooper says that he better receive 4 parachutes, along with $200,000, and the money better be in $20 bills only. Later on, during the flight, he put on these dark-rimmed wraparound glasses. The plane finally makes the landing in Seattle, after circling it a few times, telling people on the plane that it was due to little mechanical malfunctions, and it was causing the airplane to use up fuel. When the plane did land, D.B. Cooper allowed 36 people to leave the airplane after he received the money and parachutes, which he requested. He would not let the stewardess, 2 pilots, and a flight engineer get off the plane, and he demanded that they take him to Mexico City. The pilot does what D.B. Cooper told him to, and he took off towards Mexico City. D.B. Cooper told the pilot to fly 10,000 feet over the ground, and the speed of the airplane had to be under 200 knots. The pilot complied. It was around 8 o'clock at night. All of the crew were in the cockpit, when suddenly, while they were somewhere in between Seattle, Washington, and Reno, Nevada, which they are almost certain was Ariel, Washington, D.B. Cooper did the unthinkable. He had his parachute on, let down the stairs near the back of the plane, and jumped out into the evening stormy sky with all of the money in tow. After this, he completely vanished into the wilderness where he would have landed. There was a massive manhunt that took place after this. The FBI called this one of the longest and most exhaustive investigations in history. The investigation was called NORJAC, which was short for Northwest Hijacking. At first, it was suspected that D.B. Cooper knew the airports, airplanes, and the area very well. It is possible that this mysterious man had been in the military, and maybe he used to be a paratrooper. But that was eventually discredited because any qualified skydiver would not have made a leap that risky, and the skydiver would have had recognized that the parachute was a training parachute that was sewn closed, right? He wasn't even wearing suitable clothes or shoes for the landing. However, maybe that's not the case at all. Maybe it was a qualified skydiver, and they were determined, no matter what, to do this. There were 800, give or take, accused persons in question during the initial 5 years of this quest. Most of them were cleared. There was DNA from D.B. Cooper's clip-on black tie from the JCPenney store that they were able to get, which he ripped off of his shirt collar before he took the big leap. This is why a lot of people were cleared, because their DNA didn't match up. That wasn't the only thing that D.B. Cooper left behind. He left cigarette butts and a little bit of hair on the headrest of the seat that he was in. Unfortunately, there were no fingerprints that could be pulled off of any of this by the FBI. A boastful letter was received by the Portland, Oregonian newspaper in 1972, and it was signed "A Rich Man." There was a suspicious person that was of major interest in this case. His name was Richard Floyd McCoy. He was a professional skydiver and helicopter pilot. He had carried out an act of crime akin to what D.B. Cooper did just a few months after this incident on April 7, 1972, and was arrested for it. The crime was almost exactly the same. He passed a note to the flight attendant. He said he would blow up the airplane if he didn't get his requested $500,000 and precisely 4 parachutes. He also let the passengers off, asked to be flown to a specific area, and leaped out of the plane by lowering the rear stairs. The investigators questioned Richard. However, he was eliminated as a suspect in this particular criminal act, and not considered to be D.B. Cooper anymore due to the fact that the description given by 2 flight attendants just didn't match this man. Also, as Richard McCoy was serving this time in prison, 45 years, for executing the crime similar to D.B. Cooper's, he was somehow able to make a bogus firearm and he fled. Richard and some friends stole a garbage truck. It was 3 months later when authorities found him in Virginia, and their confrontation turned into a crazy gunfight. He lost that battle and died. Allegedly, D.B. Cooper was wearing a suit and tie with a trench coat over it and a pair of loafer shoes. A lot of people suspect that he may have been killed when he landed on the ground for 2 major reasons. The winds that evening were over 200 miles per hour, plus the fact that the parachute he was using couldn't have been maneuvered properly. D.B. Cooper would have also had to land in a forested area, which was super rocky, rough, and the landing would have been severe. Another suspected man in this case was Robert Rackstraw. This guy was a piece of work. In the 1970s, he was guilty of grand theft, he had $75,000 in bad checks, and he may have killed his stepdad. Robert was found innocent in his stepdad's murder, and after he was let go in 1978, he faked his own death. He lied, making a mayday from an airplane in Northern California. He was sentenced 2 years in prison for check fraud and theft of an airplane. Robert also was a Vietnam veteran. Quote, Rackstraw was interviewed about his link to the case in 1979, where he was asked explicitly to state whether he was or wasn't D.B. Cooper. With a wry smile visible across his face, he told the KNBC reporter, I'm afraid of heights, end quote. This was reported by The Mail. Don't forget this guy, because he definitely comes back around. So years pass by with a few leads that always led to nowhere. Finally, in 1980, there was a crack in the case. A young boy, 8-year-old Brian Ingram, was making a bonfire, digging into sand, minding his own business, until he discovered a box hidden under the dirt. Some kind of package that was basically rotting. Inside of this rotting box was $5,800. His mother rang the police, they came out, and to everyone's surprise, all of the money was in $20 bills. It was found north of Portland, beside the Columbia River. It was 20-some-odd miles from Ariel, which is where they suspected when he jumped from the airplane, that's where he would have landed. They checked the serial numbers on the money, and those numbers were compatible with the ransom money. After this was found out, there was another search that was extremely widespread, but it led them nowhere. The Washougal washdown theory was born. The theory was that the money dropped into the Columbia River and was carried away downstream and washed up onto the bank. The cash was mostly still intact and had rubber bands wrapped around 3 stacks of $20 bills. Also, when the little boy was around 14, 6 years after he found all that money, they let him have $2,760 of the cash. In 2008, he sold 15 of the destroyed $20 bills at some auction for $37,433.38. After the D.B. Cooper hijacking is when the Cooper veins were made. The Federal Aviation Administration forced every Boeing 727 to have these installed on the exterior. It would keep anyone from being able to let down the rear stairs while in flight. The FBI would steadily get tips, but in 2016, they chose to close down the investigation. The FBI said they could be using their funds, supplies, and any resources they had towards many other cases at this point. In 2016, there was a book written by Thomas J. Colbert and Tom Solosi, called The Master Outlaw. They investigated Robert Rackshaw's insane past for 5 years. They, along with so many others, were convinced this was D.B. Cooper. We may never know for sure, because Robert died in 2019, in the month of July, due to a heart attack. But there's still a lot to unpack about Robert Rackstraw. Don't count him out yet. One other important person of interest was Kenneth Christensen. He was a former military paratrooper. Oddly enough, the year after the hijacking, he was making pretty good money at the airlines being a mechanic, flight attendant, and a purser, and he purchased a house. No big deal, right? However, the house he bought, he paid for it all in cash. Lyle, Kenneth's brother, said that Kenneth, while dying in 1994, said, quote, "There is something you should know, but I cannot tell you," end quote. In 2018, an anonymous U.S. Army data expert produced some research that he did on his own to the FBI. He came to his own conclusion that it was a man named William J. Smith. Now, I have a picture of this man that I'll show all of you on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. If you compare it to the sketches, the similarities are unreal, and he would be the age of D.B. Cooper. I want to tell you how the anonymous U.S. Army data analyst came to this conclusion, so strap in for this. The expert, who remains anonymous, read a book written by Max Gunther in 1985 called D.B. Cooper, What Really Happened. This played a big part in this anonymous expert formulating his beliefs. Max Gunther wrote in the book that in 1972, a man who said he was D.B. Cooper got in touch with him. Well, this unknown mystery man ultimately decided to quit talking with Max. Therefore, Max had to unfortunately leave the story where it was and try to move on from it. However, a woman who said her name was Clara, 10 years after Max's book, which actually went into detail about a woman named Clara and D.B. Cooper, decided that she would reach out to Max and tell him she was Dan LeClaire's widow, and that he was the mysterious man who told Max that he was D.B. Cooper. Max's book was basically called out for being bogus, and a lot of people never took it seriously and basically portrayed it as somewhere in between nonfiction and speculation, according to the Oregonian. There were some things in his book that were said to be fallacious. This was either due to Clara attempting to conceal who she really was, or Max just pulling things out of thin air and writing about it as if it was fact. An FBI agent even talked to Max Gunther, and he essentially sacked him and said he was highly unprofessional. The anonymous analyst was not moved by any of the doubts casted on Max Gunther. He believed wholeheartedly that Max was in communication with someone who was claiming to be D.B. Cooper. The analyst kept drudging along with his research and going down the rabbit holes until he came across a man named Dan Clare. Dan Clare died in 1990 and was a veteran of World War II. The more the analyst dug into the rabbit hole, the more he didn't think Dan Clare was their guy, but he believed Dan's buddy and co-worker was the mysterious D.B. Cooper. This man was William J. Smith. William and Dan worked together at Penn Central Transportation. William passed away at the age of 89. His yearbook had an array of alumni who were murdered in World War II. There was a name that really caught the eye of the data analyst, Ira Daniel Cooper. So Dan Clare and William Smith, they were both from New Jersey, and they both worked at a rail yard in Oak Island in Newark. The U.S. Army data expert discovered that William served in the U.S. Navy. William and Dan had all of this experience working on railroads, which is important because they could map out railroad tracks and find them with ease. This means that would have assisted either one of them after parachuting from the plane to easily find a train nearby and hitch a ride back to New Jersey. The analyst told the Oregonian, quote, "I believe he would have been able to see Interstate 5 from the air," end quote. This anonymous analyst also said that a rail line at the time ran parallel to the roadway. The analyst has this theory that William Smith used his friend that died in World War II's name. He believes he called Max Gunther, and after that, the wife of William Smith, whose real name is Dolores, took over the conversation after William stopped communicating with Max. The analyst thinks that maybe Dolores was in on everything. There was another reason why this could be the work of William Smith. He had a grudge against Penn Central. The place went bankrupt in 1970, and it put thousands of people out of a job, including William. Our Anon analyst says that he was probably furious with the corporate establishment, and that anger and madness could have been motivation for William to come up with the plan of hijacking the airplane. The FBI never responded to the data experts' research. I think that's because they pretty much had their own minds made up, which I'll get into later. Okay, so stay with me on this. I will tell this part of the story slowly, because sometimes it can get confusing. I hope you're keeping up with this so far, because with this analyst's research, he or she had another theory to support their findings. Remember, Max said he spoke to a man with the last name LeClaire. Well, Dan Clare and this LeClaire man both just happened to live in New Jersey after being in World War II. Dan Clare was previously posted at Fort Lewis in Washington State. That is 41 miles south of Seattle. The FBI concluded that D.B. Cooper knew his way around Seattle before he hijacked the plane. Remember that clip-on tie? Well, it had metal on it, which made the investigators think he was possibly employed at Boeing. But the analyst thought, yeah, guess what? Someone who worked on railroads could have those same metals. Going back to Max Gunther's book, he said that LeClaire attended a skydiving facility that was close to Los Angeles, California in 1971. It's only been recently that the FBI even let the public know that it's extremely likely that this D.B. Cooper character went to a facility just like the one Max talked about in his book. So this one, to me, stands out a lot. It could be absolutely true, but of course we have more people and more theories in this unsolved mystery. We come back again to Robert Rackstraw, an Army vet from Indiana. It was said that he used the skills he learned to break the codes that were printed on letters that were allegedly written by D.B. Cooper in 1971 and 72. His findings track everything back to Robert Rackstraw, the former military pilot. Okay, so we even have to come back to Robert Rackstraw later, because now Michigan publisher Principia Media said that William R. Recca, which other sources call Walter instead of William, was the culprit. He was also a former military paratrooper as well as an intelligence operative. It's not clear if William is still living. Now, the reason I'm having to go back and forth to Robert Rackstraw is because I'm trying to get this timeline in order. So, if it's a little confusing, I'm sorry, but this is the way the story pretty much goes. So, Eric Ulis, an entrepreneur out of Arizona, said in 2019 that he was 98% confident that the FBI sat down and interviewed the actual D.B. Cooper. Eric also believes that where the FBI thinks D.B. Cooper landed, that it's not actually where he did land. He said this guy was a U.S. Marine Corps veteran named Sheridan Peterson, and that he helped refugees in Vietnam. The mystery just keeps getting crazier with more suspects. But Robert Rackstraw is one that really gets focused on later when the FBI released the files that they kept on him. In August of 2020, something major happened. The $20 bills that were discovered back in 1980 were tested. There were minuscule amounts of algae on the money, which are called diatoms. Tom Kay, a scientist and director of the Foundation for Scientific Advancement, shined a light on the theory that's been up in the air for such a long time, the Washougal washdown theory, or the Washougal washdown theory. Okay, so we know D.B. Cooper jumped out of the plane in November. What Tom discovered is that the diatoms that were found on the cash were species of the springtime. The money could not have been dropped in the fall months. However, the question of how that money that matched the serial numbers was there and found months after the jump still remains unknown. Some people think D.B. Cooper was still messing with everyone's minds. So now it's time to get into Robert Rackstraw in full. When the FBI documents were made public, we find out that the FBI agents had their sights set on Robert Rackstraw, and he was their main suspect all along. He was a U.S. Army pilot, paratrooper, he was an explosives expert, as well as a CIA black ops man. After Robert Rackstraw died in 2019, Thomas J. Colbert, a 62-year-old cold case investigator, producer, and author from Ventura, California, got the secret bureau files. He said he had to go through an extremely long legal fight for them. He said, quote, "This solves one of America's greatest criminal mysteries. Three separate intelligence community sources have told us he was a CIA freelancer before and after the hijacking, and that's why they protected him." The new files quote leading FBI investigators who were convinced that Rackstraw could be Cooper. He got away with the ransom, invested it in property, and the FBI turned a blind eye, flat out lying and covering up his crimes to avoid embarrassing the government. End quote. The Bureau's suspected propaganda operation involved both the media and the internet. Thomas Colbert found a specific entry written on dropzone.com, which is a blog for people who research D.B. Cooper. And FBI NORJAC agent Larry Carr made a post that said, quote, "There are 1,057 subfiles in the Cooper case, each representing a subject that has been investigated. There is not one piece of verifiable evidence linking a subject to the case," end quote. This is around the time that airlines had to have the Cooper vanes installed, and there were a few copycats before the installment. And the D.B. Cooper incident changed the way our airlines handled security measures. They began to x-ray luggage, etc. To add to the unfavorable FBI records, Thomas had his own team of volunteer investigators who were led by many former FBI agents. They went on to discover more than 100 items which implicated Robert Rackstraw. They found physical evidence, DNA, forensic evidence, as well as things that were told to them, as in gossip and hearsay, as well as documents that held evidence. Thomas wanted to get opinions on everything they had gathered from top-notch experts. One of these people being Joseph P. Russo Niello. He used to be an FBI agent, U.S. attorney, and a San Fran law school dean. Joseph said, quote, "I've reviewed the materials provided by your investigative team and have concluded the evidence is clear and convincing that Rackstraw was Cooper," end quote. All of this was first known to the FBI in 2015. Because Thomas Colbert had been working on this a long time before 2019. Thomas recently got his hands on the FBI emails and transcripts which said the director's senior executives dismissed a collaboration they had going on for 5 years with Thomas and his investigative team. They would no longer be accepting any of their work and what they find. By what Thomas says, the FBI lied about everything in 2016 when they stated they looked at all of the evidence, debunked it all by saying it was just not strong enough evidence, and in the end, the FBI said there isn't anything new out there about D.B. Cooper. Well, Thomas's investigative team took note of Robert Rackstraw's army picture from 1970 that they found in an old file from the Pentagon. It was said that the picture had 9 points of match when put next to the sketch of D.B. Cooper. Robert Rackstraw fit the FBI profile, and he had the skills to make a bomb and skydive. So, what would be the motive for Robert Rackstraw to do this in the first place? It had been 5 months since Robert was kicked out of the Special Forces training for lying about his rank, his medals, and saying he was college educated when actually he dropped out of high school and never even went to college. Robert sent his former brass a veiled threat. Quote, "I can only hope that I will never use the training and education the Army gave me against the Army itself, as I would be a formidable adversary." End quote. Shortly after is when the hijacking happened. Even after the hijacking, Robert Rackstraw wanted to do more. He loved adventure and getting tangled up with authorities. He trained the Shah's pilots to fly choppers in Iran before Iran was known to be more radical, printed and distributed phony checks to banks. He would steal cars as well as airplane and construction equipment. Then after disappearing with 22 cases of dynamite and weapons from an armory, authorities think he would sell them off to many different extremist groups of bombers. A few months later, Robert was captured, and he served 2 years of jail time. He had over 30 criminal titles while traveling in 5 countries with false identities. Robert had been married 3 times. He was a dad, a grandfather, and great-grandfather. He got a divorce from the 3rd and last wife, but he kept living with her. They lived together in the rich Bankers Hill area of San Diego, California, for about 20 years. Robert was an owner of a boat shop. He had a Coronado Precision Marine, along with a 45-foot cruiser, and he named it Poverty Sucks. In 1978, Robert was asked if he was D.B. Cooper, and he said, quote, could have been, end quote. Well, before he died, he was asked about it again, and he said, quote, I'm probably one of the only people who can close the case, end quote. He spoke with cops in 2016 about the money that was found by the little boy, and he said, quote, I could be wrong, but I believe that's all that will be found. End quote. Thomas J. Colbert said that Robert Rackstraw even told his family that he was D.B. Cooper. The FBI told reporters back in 1971 that there's no way someone could have survived that. But the FBI had secretly interviewed some witnesses who were farmers. They said that there were 3 people that acted as D.B. Cooper's getaway accomplices that had a little plane ready to go, and when he got to the ground, they took off with him. Thomas's team located 2 of these alleged accomplices. The money that was found was said by many people to private investigators that it had been put there by Robert to throw police and investigators off the trail and confuse them. Robert flew helicopters for an intelligence part of the U.S. Army's 1st Cavalry Division during the Vietnam War. He made friends with a CIA operative. The two would go missing for days at a time on secret missions, according to LTC Ken Overturf, who was Robert's Vietnam commander in 1969. Court records show, after his assumed 1971 hijacking of the plane, that he was a pilot for the CIA's Air America and Laws. 10 years after that, he signed up to run undercover flights during the Iran-Contra affair in Nicaragua. Robert Rackstraw said to a friend on Facebook, quote, "Everything I did for our government raised questions," end quote. Former U.S. intelligence officer and three-tour Vietnam codebuster Rick Sherwood was one of the guys on Thomas's team back in 2015. He examined six letters that were written by someone claiming to be Cooper. These letters were to basically tease and taunt everyone after he just seemed to vanish. Thomas got the letters from the FBI's D.B. Cooper file via a court order. Rick Sherwood claims that the second letter that was sent was in Army code. When he decoded the letter, it read, "If catch, I am CIA." I'll post the copies of all of this to social media. They're super interesting to look at. So, Thomas Colbert's theory is that the FBI cut off him and his investigative team's years of working with them because they were getting way too close to having so much information that could prosecute Robert Rackstraw, and the FBI didn't want that to happen. According to Thomas, the FBI wanted to protect Robert's CIA missions that were going on overseas. Thomas said, quote, "It was a cover-up, and we now have the FBI's own files to prove Rackstraw was the prime suspect. Everything points to him. He was questioned by investigators in 1978, and he gave three different alibis, all proven to be false. But the FBI still let him remain free." End quote. After Robert died, his former lawyer, Dennis Roberts, said, quote, "He's not D.B. Cooper." End quote. Oddly enough, attorney Dennis Roberts said that Robert Rackstraw was to blame for another unsolved airplane hijacking, which would make it seem like that's why he never sued anyone accusing him of being D.B. Cooper. Dennis Roberts said, quote, "It would have meant that he would have to admit the second hijack," end quote. But, by all reports I've come across, the D.B. Cooper hijacking is the only unsolved hijacking case. So, which other unsolved skyjacking could Dennis Roberts even be referring to? Even though Robert Rackstraw said on his deathbed that the assumptions that he was D.B. Cooper were absolutely tearing his life apart, he remained playful and teasing about it until he took his last breath. Quote, "They say that I'm him. If you want to believe it, believe it." End quote. That concludes the unsolved mystery of D.B. Cooper. We may never know exactly who he is, but I think it's fun to come up with our own theories. Whoever he has been successful at giving us a mystery that will be a part of history forever. Even though a lot of this is about Robert Rackstraw, I really don't count out William J. Smith. When you see the similarities in these sketches, you'll see why. Before I go, I'd like to thank my patrons on patreon.com/reverietruecrime. Thank you, Lorraine, Madeline, Trevor, Liz, Shayla, Emily, Kara, Melissa, Denise, Maggie, and Chelsea. If you sign up for $3 a month, you'll get goodies in the mail, ad-free early releases of these episodes, exclusive episodes, and more. You can check out the tier at patreon.com/reverietruecrime. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I love that this is a unsolved mystery that is just fun to speculate, and it just keeps us all wondering. So thanks for listening, and until next time, stay safe and stay healthy.